Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the next episode of the How to Lead podcast, helping you unleash influence wherever you are. My name's Adam Tarno, joined as always by Clay Scroggins. Clay, have you ever gone or is hunting one of your hobbies?
So you're tapping into an insecurity here for me, Adam. I grew up in West Alabama in the little town called Tuscaloosa, a college town. The University of Alabama is there. I did not grow up in a family that hunted, although, I mean, I played baseball in high school, so all of my high school, I wasn't confident enough to try out for the university that I attended like you did, baller. But I played in high school and all my, you know, I don't know. I feel like if you were to do a Venn diagram of baseball players and hunters, there's a fairly substantial overlap there. However, I grew up in a family of golfers, and then I am a middle child with two sisters. So I am way more comfortable in the shopping mall than I am outside. And so my buddies would go turkey hunting in the morning before school. I never did that. I've never killed a deer. I've never killed a bird. I don't really have a strong opinion on it either way. But it has definitely left me feeling less of a man,
yeah,
which is a joke because that shouldn't be what masculinity
is. No, it shouldn't be at all. It shouldn't be at all. But hey, listen, this is a safe place because I think I can sit here confidently and tell you I've never shot a mammal or a bird. I think I've actually hit more humans with baseballs and golf balls than I have
nice.
Shot animals with nice. Bullets. I'm not a hunter. And I start with that because I probably will never do it because of the story of one of my buddies. So about maybe almost 2 years ago, it was November 2019, my buddy Ryan Martin was up elk hunting in Colorado, which I know is a thing, right? Like that's kind of a good spot to go. Anyway, long story short, he was with a bunch of other men and their sons. He was the only one on the trip that had not shot an elk yet. And so his buddies dropped him off super early in the morning, like 5:30 in the morning on a day by himself so that he could try to get his trophy, right? To try to be able to shoot an elk. And a series of unfortunate events, he slipped, dropped his rifle as he was slipping, instinctively reached down to grab his rifle, and his thumb pulled the trigger. And he shot himself right above the ankle on his left leg and did not walk for almost a year, right? Had to go through 7 or 8 surgeries. It was horrific. I mean, crawled up the mountain. It's a pretty powerful story. We probably should bring him on to talk about this at some point. But you know that phrase, that idea, shoot yourself in the foot? You know,
well, that was all I was thinking about when you were telling the story. Yeah. I was like, oh my goodness, he did what everyone says
he actually did. Yeah. Wow. And I got to see firsthand just how frustrating it is because it's not only was a terrible inconvenience for he and his family, but he had nobody to blame, right? It wasn't a hunting accident where his buddy shot him. It was he had done it. And so I got to watch this family up close, had a front row seat. They're dear friends of ours. And he is without a doubt, Ryan Martin is without a doubt, one of the most resilient people I know. And so that's why we tell that story and talk about that.
So it couldn't have happened to a better person.
Right. That's right. I mean, I would have freaked out exactly. Just having been dropped off in the woods at 5:30 in the morning by myself. But
they wouldn't have found me. I would still be out there. I would be by myself dead in the wind. They'd be like, we don't know what happened to him.
We don't know where he went. We think he's in a tree.
That's right.
His clothes are strewn everywhere. His water bottle's full. He's written messages in the dirt, all that. Yeah. So he's incredibly resilient. And I think, you know, we've already talked about this subject on the podcast, episode 8. We had Sheryl Sandberg talking about the importance of leading. As a leader, you've got to be resilient. And so, Clay, just in your words, why do you think it's so important for a leader to have this characteristic of being resilient?
You know, my, our kids take this class at school. I didn't have a class like this. It makes so much sense. They're teaching them like how to actually be a good person and solve real problems in life. And I can't even remember what they title it. It's basically like the counselor who is like the coolest teacher in the school. It's like the person they love more than anything, which was not the way it was when I was a kid.
No.
The counselor was like super odd. Anyway, but my son came home the other day, or it was probably a year ago, talking about the resiliency zone.
Ooh.
And learning how to stay in the resiliency zone.
I like
and
that.
And he really taught me something. I mean, it was one of those moments where I think I was doing a sermon series on the topic of resilience. And he heard me talking about it. It was like, oh, I know all about it. And then he started sharing me. And I, you know, I was like, oh gosh, I think that's better than what I'm currently going to teach. But I think the concept of resilience is the ability to bounce back from a hard situation, from a failure, yeah. from something that doesn't go your way. And it's, I think of it like a tank, you know, like we have a, you know, how much gas do you have in the tank? There is a zone, there's a margin, there's an amount of, there's an amount that we either have or don't have in the tank, in the zone, to be able to draw on so that we can bounce back quicker and so that it will have less effect on us. That's really the hope, is that when something, you know, you get the flat tire and you're able to just able to bounce back emotionally. Yeah. Exactly. You know, and I would, sounds like your friend had the wherewithal that he had developed. I mean, it's a muscle that you can grow and build and strengthen over time. And he had worked on the muscle to be able to bounce back from what sounds like an incredibly tragic, hard thing that would have devastated a lot of other people.
Yeah. I mean, really, you know, again, not to get too much into their story, but their family walked through, his wife had breast cancer the year and a half even before this happened. So this whole family has learned how to bounce back. So if I was going to be snarky and talk about why I think resilience is so important as a leader, it's because leaders, leadership is often just dealing with problems like all day, every day, right? There's always these difficult decisions you need to make. There's not answers in the back of the book. Oftentimes you feel like you're winging it. And so failure is just a part of leadership. As we talked about in one of our previous episodes, you don't know a lot of things. And so you're going to make a lot of guesses, and those guesses are going to be wrong. And so you have got to be able to develop this characteristic to bounce back. And I think it's possible to do it, though, without shooting yourself in the foot, right? And so that's what we want to talk about today. You don't have to go and learn everything the hard way. I think there are some things that you can do now, maybe without, you know, experiencing a tragedy or a really difficult failure, to be able to learn how to be resilient. So to be resilient is that ability to recover or easily adjust from misfortune or change. And I think there's three things that we can do to help build that resilience now, despite whatever circumstances we've got. So the first one, if I could just throw it out there, would be to leave the comfort zone. Leave the comfort zone. So when your son talked about the resilience zone, it's really interesting because I thought maybe he was going to talk about this here with the comfort zone. So how did he describe, what is the resilience zone?
Well, I think it's the, when you have something left in the tank, when you're, you have gone through something that's been hard enough that you've gotten through. I mean, that's how we put things in the tank, is
that's
we,
right.
You know, you know how to recover from, you forgot your homework, or you know how to recover from, you didn't get the results on the test that you were looking for. I think that's what the counselor is trying to help them see, is, hey, when you go through those little things, you're building, you're inputting something into that zone. And I think that is those moments where we have to leave the comfort zone. You know,
that's right.
I mean, for a kid, it would be, you know, I think about overnight camp. I mean, that was like a big deal for our kids to get to where they felt like they could go spend a week without us, which is like the whole goal of parenting, is like, go spend your life without us and then want to come back whenever you want to come back. I mean, that we want a relationship, but we want you out on your own. That's the goal,
right?
But the way you start is by, you do little things, you know, like they spent the night at the grandparents' house. They spent the night at the aunt's house. You know, they did the 1 day camp. They did the 2 day camp. They had to leave the comfort zone so that they learned, oh, I can do it. I've got it. I can actually manage when I don't have my own surroundings or my own stuff.
I like that a lot. And it does, it seems to fall in line with Judith Bardwick is her name, some of her research, where she basically set out there to just say, I think there's a false dichotomy out there, that there is the comfort zone, and then the opposite of the comfort zone is the panic zone. Right. And so if we think there's only two zones in life, it's like, well, no, I like this comfort zone. This is easy. I don't want to be out there where it's all crazy and panicky. And she said, that's not the way it works. Usually the way this works is you've got the comfort zone, then you've got a fear zone where you step out and you realize, I don't necessarily know what to do. I'm feeling a little insecure. I'm a little bit beyond what I feel like I'm equipped to do. when you can hang out in that fear zone, then you start to learn, right? And so then she would call that the learning zone that then ultimately becomes the growth zone. And so I think for us as leaders, if we want to start to develop some resilience, it would be good to put ourselves in some situations on purpose where we don't feel 100% confident. So for some of you right now listening, that may be speaking up more in a team meeting. It may be volunteering for a project that you don't know if you've got all the capability to do that. It could be engaging in a conversation with your boss or a coworker that you know is going to be hard. It may be a little bit awkward. But just, are you doing something on a regular basis where you don't feel completely confident? And that's actually really good. If you don't feel confident, well, now you're going to set yourself up for some learning. And then if you're setting yourself up for some learning, you're going to grow. And what's going to happen in all of that is you're going to become more resilient. So Clay, can you think of a time in your leadership journey where stepping out of that comfort zone and putting yourself in a situation where you lacked some confidence actually in the end helped you learn and grow and become more resilient?
I think of numerous times for sure, but one of the ones that's hardest for me is, you know, there's a spiritual habit or concept that I think one of the points of it is working this muscle, is building this resilience inside of you. And it only happens by leaving the comfort zone. But you're familiar. Of course you are, but I know most of our listeners would be, but even if they're not, you get this pretty quickly. But the idea of fasting, not a real popular concept, but you know, it's particularly, it's not just a Christian spiritual discipline, but I would put it in the religious category of disciplines, but there's something powerful about the habit in general. And I think the concept of it is what you're doing is you are teaching yourself, oh, if I didn't have food today, I can make it. You know, we're not talking about like entering the show naked and afraid, you know, like we're not saying go live in the wilderness without any clothes or, you know, where you get one tool. I mean, we're just saying, can you skip lunch? You know, like, do you have the ability to not eat from sunup to sundown? And you know, and you don't have to fast from food. I mean, there's plenty. I remember for me, it was my wife's so good at this. She, at the beginning of every month almost, she says she picks something that she's not going to do, like something to quit, something to stop. So it might be, you know, no alcohol this month. It might be no desserts this month. It might be no impulsive spending on myself for the month. You know, whatever it may be, it's picking one little thing. I mean, doing the social media for a month was excellent. You know, just saying like, not that there's anything wrong with social media, but I'm just going to show myself that I can do it. And what it does is it just strengthens, it builds that muscle of resilience to let yourself know, okay, hey, when you get out of the comfort zone, you can get over that hump of fear and you start to learn, you start to grow. So I think it is something that I've certainly experienced it. And it's something that we can make ourselves experience when we feel like we need to grow and get better.
Yeah, so this is just a simple way that you can start to become a more resilient leader without shooting yourself in the foot. You don't have to wait for a massive failure. You don't have to wait for a tragedy to go, okay, well, I learned a lot there. Life may throw you some of those curveballs and you may be forced to become resilient, but there are some things. So just a really simple question that we can ask ourselves is, am I doing anything? Am I taking a step out of the comfort zone and just trying to do something that feels like, oh, I don't know if I can do that? That's not bad. That could be really good for you and could ultimately help you in the long run to become more resilient. So that's one thing I'm learning about how to build resilience without going through, you know, some big tragedy or situation. Number two, this one's really helpful for me, is to make friends with failures. Make friends with failures. And so if you leave the comfort zone, sometimes it's not going to work out. Nobody is immune to failure. In fact, if you want to see an interesting list, go Google some of the biggest product flops of all time. And you're going to start to hear about things like the Apple Newton. You're going to hear about the Nintendo Virtual Boy. You want a fascinating read if you just need a little brain break today. Go Google Wow Chips and hear about that whole debacle that happened with Frito-Lay. So these are massive organizations that have a track record of a lot of success, but they also all have failure as a part of them. They launched products that didn't work. And so we all go through this, right? Like everybody, not every idea, there is no such thing as the Midas touch where everything you touch turns to gold and it always works out. There's always going to be some failure. And so I have found that with my circle of friends, and it could be people that I'm working with now, or just, you know, like, you know, just people in your peer network, talking about failure with your friends, bringing this up as a regular topic does two things. Number one, it reminds you that it happens. And then to hear other stories of how they rebounded from failure just reminds you that you're going to be okay. You're going to be able to bounce back from this. And so it can provide some of that motivation then to leave that comfort zone to just go, okay, it's not going to be the end of the world if this idea doesn't work out, this new business idea. If I raise my hand in that meeting and I speak up and I just say something stupid, it's okay. It's going to work out. Failure is going to be a part of this. And so just a topic of conversation to not always just be talking about all the things that are going great. Start to talk about some of the things that are not going great, and that can help build resilience as well. So have you seen that play out in your life at all? And, you know, talking about failures and swings and misses with other leaders?
Well, it's not something that I'm good at because I have found this strong desire in me to be perceived as successful. And failure is one of those things that makes you, kind of cripples you, paralyzes you. You tell yourself all the wrong stories about what people now think of you, which are not actually true usually. So yeah, I would say learning to do this, of course, it's not easy. But, you know, for me, I remember this is an odd moment, Adam, but my wife and I we had to do this marriage intensive. It was a school program. Actually, I was working on my doctoral program at Dallas Seminary. And one of the classes that they made you take is they made you go to this marriage intensive, which was interesting. And we learned a lot. It was actually great. And we were sitting with a guy named Chip Dickens, who is the dean of the counseling department at Dallas Theological Seminary. And I never forget we had a long, long session, maybe a like 4-hour counseling session with him. And so we had like covered all my stuff, you know, like 3.5 hours. And then we had like the 30 minutes to spend. I'm just kidding. And then we were on to my wife's stuff, which was great. I was like, oh yeah, let's dig in. Let's talk about these, you know. So no, but my wife is prone to being a perfectionist. And so what I like to say is she's never gotten anything wrong in her life. Hmm. And part of it is because she only does what she knows she can crush. And so she would say she has a much smaller capacity than I do, but I would say, no, she just, when she does it, it's 105%, you know, whereas when I do it, it's like maybe 82, you know? So he kind of discovered this and he's kind of working through this and said, you know, was asking her questions about it, whatever. He said, you know what? He said, I've got an assignment for you. And I'm like, oh yeah, tell her, what assignment do you have for her? And he said, Jenny, I want you to invite another family over for dinner. I want you to put the lasagna in the oven, and then I want you to just intentionally forget about it and just burn the mess out of it, like to the point where the house is smoking, like you have to open up the doors and get the towels out and like wave all the smoke out and then just tell everyone, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. I forgot about the lasagna and I burned it. We're going to have to order pizza, and then order the pizza, have dinner, and just see what it does to the night. And of course, I'm sitting there going like, oh, well, she's never going to do this, right? But that's the point. The point is she's never going to do it, which is why she probably needs it. Now, as we've all grown and matured, I mean, she's much better at doing that now. I mean, she's had her burn the lasagna kind of moments where you just realize you're like, oh, it's okay. Like everything's fine. I mean, we ordered the pizza and
I love that. Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times they're like, oh, we like pizza more than lasagna anyway, you know, or whatever it may be. Yeah. I mean, you end up laughing about it. It becomes a story to tell, whatever. But I love the simple concept of making friends with failure, because you cannot grow your resilience if you're not friends with failure. And I would just say, if you can't think of the last time that you have failed, if you think about, okay, when's the last time you did something that didn't work out, then you probably need to take a risk, take a chance, step out and try something.
Get out of that comfort zone. Do something that's going to be perceived to be a little bit risky, where you're going to lack a little bit of confidence. And I like, you know, I wrote this point out. I said, make friends with failures, right? Like
oh, that's good. Sorry.
Make this regular conversation.
Not singular, plural.
But I like what you're saying though, because it really is, it's like point 2B here. Is also making friends with failure as an idea, right? That it's going to be okay. And one of the ways to normalize that is to talk about it with your friends. That's what I loved so much about Sheryl Sandberg's story, was as she talked about coming back to work and saying, you know, things in meetings that she regretted and getting somebody's name wrong and crying. She was normalizing failure, or normalizing that things don't always go the way you want it to go. And that gives us the courage to be able to step outside of that comfort zone. And then we're going to be able to build the resilience. We've got to know that if things don't go right, we're going to be okay. And that gives us the courage then to keep moving forward. So I think we leave that comfort zone. That's a way that we can build resilience without shooting ourselves in the foot. We're making friends with failures and with failure, normalizing the conversation, just reminding ourselves we're going to be okay. And then the third one I would say is this, is just that I'm learning is not to let fear and shame stop you from growing. If there is a time where I think we are going to run the risk of turning our back on a failure and not learning from it, it's going to be if we're feeling fear or feeling shame. If we feel fear, like we think something in the future is going to go wrong, we might get fired, or we're afraid that our reputation's going to change, it's going to be really hard to learn from that situation if you run when you're afraid. And consequently, the same I think goes with shame, that if you are looking back on a decision and you regret it and you're feeling ashamed of it and you want to run and hide. I joked at the beginning of this podcast, Clay, that I've hit more people with golf balls and baseballs than I have with bullets.
Is that legit?
It's legit. So I had two rounds of golf in the past month, Clay, two rounds of golf in a row where I hit people with my golf ball. What I wanted to do in both of those moments was get into my golf cart, go to my, take my clubs, throw them in the water, drive my golf cart to my car, get in my car, and never show my face at that club ever again, at that golf course ever again. But as silly as this sounds, I knew, I was like, I need to stay here. I need to go talk to that person. I need to go follow up with that person when I see them a little bit later on in the round. I need to stay here with my friends. I need to learn in this and try to develop some resilience because my heart beats bad and my heart's racing. I feel so bad right now. I'm feeling so much shame and I need to hang out in this and not run from this so that I can learn some resilience and finish the rounds up and had great conversations with the guys. And it really, you know, and I can tell these stories with a little smile on my face and laugh about it now because nobody's seriously hurt. But it was just a silly example of when fear or shame pop up, our instinct is the run.
I think that concept that you're talking about is so important because you're absolutely right that our tendency is to want to run. And if you run, you don't grow. That the only way to grow is to stay and to continue to show up. I mean, I've had so many of my own stories like that, you know, where I remember speaking at this college ministry where, you know, I did the whole talk with my zipper down and get in the car to drive home. And a friend of mine texts me and says, "Has anyone told you yet?" And I'm like,
"Oh, that's awesome. Not the text you want.
Awesome,
after you speak.
How awesome the talk was. Have they said that?" No, yeah. No. He said, "Has anyone told you that you're zipping?" I looked down and I was like, "Oh my goodness.
It's
you
still open.
Kidding me. It's still open. Still open, you know, quite breezy, you know." But I've had times where I had to apologize at a conference. Oh my gosh. I was hosting this. It was for me, it was one of the bigger events that I had ever done, a conference in California. And I was hosting with a really close friend of mine, and I made a couple of jokes that they just didn't land well. And it made, honestly, I had to go apologize the next session. And it just, yeah, everything in me wanted to get my stuff and go home. But you're right. The only way to grow is to continue to show up. And so I would just say, if you've had that failure, I mean, the order here is so well thought out, Adam, that, you know, you got to start by leaving the comfort zone. Then you may fail, but you got to become friends with failure and failures. But when you fail, fear and shame are going to tell you that you're awful and that you're worthless. Yep. And that you don't have what it takes to be a leader. And they're going to whisper all of these things inside of your head and you got to fight it. And you got to just say, no, I'm not going to listen to that. I'm going to continue to show up.
That's when the real resilience is being built, right? Like that's when the muscle is growing back. That's the good work. And I think for a lot of leaders, I think back in my own life, right? There's not times where I've done this perfect every time, but in younger leaders that I've spent time with is when those really strong, powerful emotions show up of fear and shame, the temptation is to get out of there. And those that stick around and face it, and admit it, they always end up on the back end of that, just going, "Whew, I, you know what? I'm feeling like it changes where the comfort zone is. The comfort zone now moves, and now you're in a new comfort zone. And sooner or later, you start to put together a few of those over your career. You start to look back and just go, man, I'm feeling a healthy level of confidence right now in my ability to make decisions. And even if I make the wrong decisions, it's going to be okay. I can now serve this team well. We can lead well. I can be that optimistic, confident leader because we've got that resilience. And so it's really, really necessary for us. And you know, I'll just make this the final thought, because things as a leader, Clay, and all of our listeners know this, like it just never goes 100% as planned. There's always going to be failure. Failure and hardship is just given. Success is not avoiding failure. It's the ability to bounce back and endure failure when it shows up and to build that resilience. And you don't have to go through that situation like my buddy Ryan did to be able to do that. So how are you leaving that comfort zone? What are some things I'm doing that are just causing me to feel a little lack of confidence? You know you're doing some things right there. Normalizing talking about when you fail and making friends with people that have failed, and being comfortable knowing that this is going to happen. And then when you feel those strong emotions of fear and shame, that's when the work is happening. The real work is happening. Try to resist the urge to run in those situations. You do that, I think you're going to really start to develop the resilience that you want as a leader. So any final thoughts, Clay, before we wrap up?
Well, you know what you get when you don't get what you want? You get experience. And that's right. And that's a really good, that's what experience is. Experience is what you get when you don't get what you want. And we've all had situations where we didn't get what we wanted, but we're so grateful. I mean, you know, that question, whenever people ask, you know, you hear it on How I Built This or whatever, hey, when you look back, is there anything you would change? And it's always a hard question, because it's like, well, I mean, there's things that I would do different, but I don't know that I would change anything because it made me who I am. Right.
That's right.
And so I just want to encourage anybody who's listening, if you're in the middle of a hard thing, or you're currently in that season of bouncing back, it doesn't have to identify you. It doesn't have to label you. It doesn't have to prescript the next 5 years or 10 years of your life, that it can just become experience. And of course, we all have it. We all have that thing that you get when you don't get what you want, and it makes you who you are. And if you allow it to, it will build into you an even stronger you that will help you when the next trial or difficulty or situation or failure comes your way. So
yeah, not if, but when it happens.
That's right. Hey, thanks for putting these three things together, Adam. This is fabulous.
Well, that's all we got for today's episode of the How to Lead podcast. You can always reach out to us via email. We can be reached at info@howtolead.work. That's info@howtolead.work. Every episode is mixed and edited by the team over at Sound of a Rose. You can learn more about them at soundofarose.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you again next time.